Remember the prom shows on Glee? A celebration of difference. Kurt even became prom queen. TV shows like Glee, Dan Savage's It Gets Better Project, these have all been lifesavers for bullied gay teenagers. There was nothing like it when Eric Poole was growing up in the Midwest in the 70s. He was miserable. His mother raged at his out-of-work dad when she wasn't lemon-pledging the Zenith TV. He tried to please her by not leaving footprints on the shag rug. Then there was Grandma, the chain smoker who set the mattress on fire, his sister Val, who Grandma said was turning into a truck stop whore, and any number of school bullies for whom Eric, with his perfect hand motions to the Supremes, stop in the name of love, was a perfect target. He did have one television friend.
I worshipped the TV show Bewitched, and to mother's irritation could be found flattening the shag in the family room every Thursday night when it aired. The lovely wife, Samantha, her devoted husband, Darren, and their spotless suburban home all mirrored my own family's existence, but with a refreshing lack of screaming and crying. Yet even more alluring was the magic. The notion of being able to snap my fingers, wave my hands, or twinkle my nose and magically alter the circumstances of life was intoxicating, akin to learning voodoo or having Jesus owe you one. And the more I watched, the more I became convinced that somewhere within my own being, I must possess similar magical powers.
To try to find them, Eric turned an old white bedspread in the basement into his magical robes. He'd don them and make wishes like, "Please, God, let Christmas go well." Oh, and God, how to handle God when you're growing up gay and Baptist. Eric Poole's memoir is Where's My Wand? One Boy's Magical Triumph Over Alienation and Shag Carpeting. It's being released in paperback today. We spoke when the book first came out. Boy, let's start at the very beginning where we're introduced first to your mom, just a banshee, overwhelmed by work and keeping a house together. And in your dedication, you mention her. You say, "To my beloved and much mellowed mother, who's never let me forget that she loves me, even after reading this book." How does that happen, forgiveness? Because it's some
tough.
Well,
I know. When you call her General Patton and Pedal Pushers, you kind of set yourself up for problems. she's great now. She really is. But back then, she was a holy terror. And it's like, you know, I explained to her early on, it's like, I have to paint you as you were then, not as you are now, you know. And she, to her credit, I mean, I have to tell you, when she first read the first few chapters of the book, she called me and she said, friends have advised me to seek cover in the Witness Protection Program. But she's really just been nothing but 1,000% supportive. I mean, she said to me recently, I guess if Leona Helmsley can be the queen of mean, I can be the queen of clean.
Just a little bit about the cleanliness inside and outside in the Poole home.
Oh, yeah. Her entire life when she was not at work was spent cleaning. I mean, she ironed everything that had a cotton fill, I mean, down to the tongues of tennis shoes.
Did she really iron the tongues of tennis shoes?
Oh, yeah. It was just like everything had to be perfectly pressed and starched. Like, God bless her. I mean, it was great to crawl into a bed that, you know, there was no wrinkles or anything, but it was a little exhausting for her.
Well, and everything had to be good with a capital G. No bad language, no acting out. The whole picture was one of just being
perfect
and repressed. Yeah. And here you are slowly realizing that you're maybe a little different.
That was a bit of a problem, you know, as you can well imagine. You can see why I might have glommed onto something like magic.
Yeah. So tell us about the magic. What were some of the things you put this, was it a chenille bedspread?
Yeah, it was this white thing with fringe on it.
Yeah.
I found it in a closet. And, you know, so when nobody was home, I would, like, sneak down to the basement because, let's face it, this is the last thing I needed anybody to find out. And I would put that bedspread on and close my eyes and wave my arms dramatically, you know, and try to cast these spells to change my life. And, you know, in the beginning, it really seemed to work. There were instances where my mother was kind of a holy terror, and my dad was this really, and still is, this really easygoing guy. And, you know, you can read easygoing sometimes as needs to stand up to her. And so I managed to make him stand up to her in a fairly dramatic way. And I managed to befriend this super cool girl in my class who had no arms. And I was able to make my grandmother and my mother get along, or so I thought. You know, the magic, although it seemed to work, you know, there were times when it kind of didn't come out exactly the way I anticipated it would.
Well, so you first think the magic works, and then you realize that the bedspread has lost its, you know, if it had it at all, it's lost it. And you sort of turn to God, who, again, there's a religion plays a very big role in the home. And you turn to God, and what happens with God?
Well, you know, God became my, because I was, you know, learning in church that magic is a cult, you know, black, it's dark, it's evil. So I had to somehow rationalize this magic that I was doing. And so I thought, well, all the magic comes from God. It's like miracles, you know. So that was the way I sort of began to rationalize that it was okay to continue to do my magic.
Well, a little more about that, because you're bullied all the time. There's a bully in the neighborhood who is shooting animals, a little, mm-hmm. little poor little rabbits. And you really are having this crisis of, well, wait
a
second. It
was a crisis of faith. It was really tough to rationalize, because it was like I felt abandoned by God. You know what I mean? It was like, hey, wait a minute. My magic's not working anymore. What's going on here? You know, has God abandoned me? Has magic abandoned me? I really couldn't wrap my head around it at that time.
Well, we should say this is all sounding very serious, and it is. I mean, this is important stuff, and everybody can relate to aspects of it. But it's hilarious. Did you feel any of that hilarity when you were a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I did. I think the only way you can get through those things is to try to find some humor in the whole situation. And of course, looking back, you look at it from a different perspective anyway. But you know, I mean, my family was just hilarious. I mean, to me, they were very funny. They didn't particularly think they were funny, but I thought they were hysterical.
So we should note that. But there's one moment, and it just happens, and we move on. Where, I mean, you sort of tell us that you feel you did hear from God.
I had my burning bush moment.
In the basement?
Yeah, yeah.
And so you do embrace a God.
I do. I do. I still do. You know, I mean, I look at magic now, honestly, as an adult, and I think of it as like two-pronged. You have to believe in yourself and your ability to make things happen, and then I also believe in a God or a universe, whatever you want to think of it as, working with you to make that happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
God, this all sounds so profound.
I know
it's really a funny book. But
it is. Well, any book that has profound thinking and shag carpeting is going to be funny. But we don't want to give away the ending, except to say that you were so desperate to overcome this caricature that you had become, you know, the kid that everybody picked on. When you do change that, it involves a trumpet.
Yes. I discovered I had some musical talent, which was great news in our household, because there didn't seem to be a lot of talent going around. And that becomes my avenue for discovering my place.
So I began, Eric Poole, by saying that you had a miserable childhood. I think that's probably still true. But how did it form you now? I mean, you know, what did it do for you?
Here's an interesting thing. On the plus side, it made me a little bit of a people pleaser, which can be exhausting for me. But it also means I get along well with people. You know, I play nice with others. And it's funny, because my mother, as much of a handful as she was also incredibly gracious to people that she liked. I learned a lot by watching her. And so even in the midst of really crappy, unhappy moments in childhood, you can take something positive out of those and turn it into something good.
Do you think that, I mean, this was 69, 70, 71. Do you think young boys are still having this experience of sort of slowly people realizing that maybe they're different, but nobody really talking about it because nobody did, and having to make their own way? And
oh, I absolutely do. I mean, you know, in L.A., in New York, in Chicago, you know, maybe not so much. But, I mean, I go home to St. Louis, and I see how it's just a different world. It really is.